Blessed are you, Lord God, King of the universe, who gives us this day and who gives us this word. And thank you for your word, and we ask that you would help us to receive it. In Revelation 8:7, the first angel sounded, and there followed hail and fire mingled with blood. And they were cast upon the earth, and the third part of the trees were burnt up, and all the green grass was burnt up. And the second angel sounded, as it were a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea, and the third part of the sea became blood. And it is into this world that we now enter, into a world in this condition that millions will live into and be left alive. And Revelation 16:3 says, and the second angel poured out his vial upon the sea, and it became as blood, as the blood of a dead man, and every living soul died in the sea. And the third angel poured out his vial upon the rivers and the fountains of the waters, and they became as blood. And the fourth angel poured out his vial upon the sun, and power was given unto him to scorch men with fire. And men were scorched with great heat, and blasphemed the name of Elohim, which has the power over the plagues. And they repented not to give him glory. Revelation 16:18 continues, and there were voices, and thunders, and lightnings, and there was a great earthquake, such as was not since men were upon the earth. So mighty an earthquake, and so great. And the great city was divided into three parts, and the cities of the nation fell, and great Babylon came in remembrance before Elohim to give unto her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. And every island fled away, and the mountains were not found. And into this chaotic and desolate landscape, either we or our children, or perhaps our grandchildren, and millions of other frail beings, the total future of humanity will find themselves a part of and depend upon what is left over. Now consider the fate of Luke, a 19-year-old man who has come through all this and is in hiding with a few friends in an isolated lake cottage in southern Oklahoma. Despite its remote location, its isolation, he has survived the floods, the firestorms, the earthquakes, the ravages of these events. The air is filled with soot. The noondays are as dusk, and the trees and the grass are singed, and food is scarce, and the landscape is barren, and the waters are polluted. Luke and a few friends are just barely holding on to life. They have been surviving by scavenging canned food they found in the ashes of a local burned-out supermarket. And that source is almost gone. A few more cans left. And he has a fever. And boils are breaking out over his body. And his vision is cloudy. He can just see blurred visions and shadows now. And his mind is getting confused. What will life be like for this young man? Just when all is lost, when despair has reached its nidus, when there seems no more hope, at an instant, at the twinkling of an eye, the pivotal time in human history and in world history, it has happened. Yeshua and the saints have just touched ground on the Mount of Olives. They come on white horses. They have overthrown the governance of this world. And a saint rides his horse through the air to Oklahoma, and there finds Luke and his ailing, frail friends. All over the world, the saints travel to bring emergency aid. They miraculously provide for those who are famished, weak, blind, lame, who are undernourished, all who are of this frail remnant. The peoples are cared for, they're clothed, and then they're resettled. The feeding and the clothing of the refugees. Isaiah 40:10 tells us, behold, Yahweh, Elohim, will come with a strong arm, and his arm shall rule for him, and behold, his reward is with him, and his work before him, and he shall feed his flock like a shepherd, and he shall gather the lambs with his arm, and carry them in his bosom, and he shall gently lead those that are with young. Now these little ones, these survivors, are gathered. They're protected by the chief shepherd himself. He prepares and provides their food and drink and provides for covering. He who is personally and emotionally comforting them. He who provides gentleness to those who have lived through the most violent time in human history. A regathering and an organizing of the nations. Zechariah 8:6 continues, "Thus says Yahweh of hosts, if it be marvelous in the eyes of the remnant of the people in these days, should it also be marvelous in mine eyes, says Yahweh of hosts. Thus says Yahweh of hosts, behold, I will save my people from the east country and from the west country, and I will bring them, and they shall dwell in the midst of Jerusalem. And they shall be my people, and I will be their Elohim in truth and in righteousness." And Jeremiah 30, verse 8 continues, "Behold, I will bring them from the north country, and I will gather them from the coast of the earth. And with them the blind and the lame, and the woman with child, and her that travaileth with child together, a great company shall return thither. And they shall come with weeping, and with supplications will I lead them, and I will cause them to walk by the rivers of the waters in a straight way, wherein they shall not stumble. For I am a father to Israel, and Ephraim is my firstborn." Hear the word of Elohim, O you nations, and declare it in the isles afar off, and say, "He that scattered Israel will gather him, and keep him as a shepherd does his flock." Isaiah 60, verse 4 says, "Lift up your eyes round about and see. All they gather themselves together, they come to you. Your sons shall come from afar, and your daughters shall be nursed at your side. Then shall you see and flow together, and your heart shall fear and be enlarged because of the abundance of the sea shall be converted into you, and the forces of the Gentiles shall come to you, and the multitude of camels shall cover you, and the dromedaries of Midian and Ephah. All they from Sheba shall come, and they shall bring gold and incense, and they shall show forth the praises of Yahweh, and the flocks of Kedar shall be gathered together unto you, and the rams of Nebaioth shall minister unto you, and they shall come up with acceptance on mine altar, and I will glorify the house of my glory. Who are these that fly as a cloud and as the doves in the windows? Surely the isles shall wait for me, and the ships of Tarshish first, to bring your sons from far, their silver and their gold with them, and to the name of Yahweh your Elohim, to all and to the Holy One of Israel, because he has glorified you." And Isaiah 11:11 says, "And it shall come to pass that Yahweh shall set his hand again the second time to recover the remnant of his people, which shall be left from Assyria and from Egypt and from Paphos and from Cush and from Elam and from Shinar and from Hamat and from the islands of the sea. And he shall set up an ensign for the nations, and shall assemble the outcast of Israel, and gather together the dispersed of Judah from the four corners of the earth." And so Luke and his friends shall be brought to the land of Israel by foreign ships, manned by a captain and a crew who wish to help the resettling of the scattered remnant of Ephraim and Judah, the people of Yahweh. And he finds himself among hundreds of others, most of whom he'd never heard of or seen before, down the Arkansas River, then down the Mississippi into the Gulf, and across the Atlantic and through the Mediterranean. Some come from Australia, and a lot from Africa, and from India, and from Russia, from Argentina, and from China, all heading towards the coast of Israel. And there they settle and begin a new life. They plant crops and they build shelters, more like sukkah at first, and begin to reorganize into villages and townships and districts and nations. But soon, and among the first of things, they travel to Jerusalem to meet Yeshua HaMashiach and the saints. Isaiah 2:2 says, "And it shall come to pass in the last days that the mountain of Yahweh's house shall be established in the top of the mountains and shall be exalted above the hills, and all the nations shall flow to it, and many people shall go and say, Come you, let us go up into the mountain of Yahweh, to the house of Elohim of Jacob, and he will teach us his ways, and we will walk in his paths, for out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of Yahweh from Jerusalem." Then to an inheritance just north of Jerusalem, near a small burned out village, they're given personal property, but on to a life filled with many challenges. Isaiah 58:12 continues, "And they shall be, and they that shall be of you shall build the old waste places. You shall raise up the foundation of many generations, and you shall be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of the paths to dwell in." And from the remnants of the recent battles of Gog and Magog and Meshach and Tubal, who have come to spoil, there's 7 months of burying the dead and cleansing the land, and then on to replanting and to rebuilding. Isaiah 61:4 says, "And they shall build the old places, and they shall raise up the former desolations, and they shall repair the waste cities and the desolations of many generations." Ezekiel 34:26 says, "I will make them and the places round about my hill a blessing, and I will cause the shower to come down in his season, and there shall be showers of blessing. And the tree of the field shall yield her fruit, and the earth shall yield her increase, and they shall be safe in their land, and shall know that I am Yahweh, whom I have broken the bands of their yoke, and delivered them out of the hand of those that serve themselves of them, and they shall no more be a prey to the heathen, neither shall the beast of the land devour them, but they shall dwell safely, and none shall make them afraid." Zechariah 8:3 says, "Thus says Yahweh, I am returned to Zion, and will dwell in the midst of Jerusalem. And Jerusalem shall be called a city of truth, and the mountain of Yahweh of hosts, the holy mountain. Thus says Yahweh of hosts, there shall yet be old men and old women dwelling in the streets of Jerusalem, and every man and his staff in his hand for very old age. And the streets of the city shall be full of boys and girls playing in the streets thereof." And the streets here, of course, are plazas, you know, places where we gather. These are not people living in a street, as we would see. Dwell means to shavat, to rest, or to dwell. And so that they build and rebuild the paths and the plazas and the cities and the houses. And notice that these are done by the hand of men and women with hard work, sweat, but under the guidance, under the direction, the mentoring of Yeshua and the sons of Elohim. Now, when I, like I suppose many, consider the world tomorrow, the millennium, I, like so many others, can too much focus on myself, on my role as a resurrected saint, on ruling over the nations with a rod of iron. So easily it is to dwell on our part as resurrected saints of Yahweh, as kings and priests and rulers, on royal jobs and responsibilities. We can, if not careful, assign the role of the millions who live into the millennium, who are born in the millennium, into a very passive role, sitting under a fig tree, sipping milk and honey, while the sons of Elohim provide life on a silver platter. But consider, and I'd have you turn to this scripture, we're going through a lot, Psalms 127:1. Psalms 127:1. Psalms 127:1. Except Yahweh build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except Yahweh keep the city, the watchman waketh, but in vain. The principle is clear. Elohim directs, but man does the work. When it says here that Yahweh does a work, and more often than not, he does it through his servants. Now, as soon as the immediate needs of the remnant, and in fact, while they're being taken care of, the seeds of a new educational system are put into place, organizing a righteous, a law-abiding society is a very early priority. Educational systems are established based upon the law of Yahweh. Leviticus 26:2, you shall keep my Sabbaths and reverence my sanctuary, for I am Yahweh. If you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and do them, then I will give you rain in due season, and land shall yield her increase, and the trees of the fields shall yield her fruit, and your threshing shall reach into the vintage, and the vintage shall reach into the sowing time, and you shall eat your bread to the full and dwell in your land safely, and I will give you peace in the land, and you shall lay down, and none shall make you afraid, and I will rid evil beast out of the land, neither shall the sword go through your land. And continue in verse 12, and I will walk among you and will be your Elohim, and you shall be my people. So early on, all are taught the relationship between the laws of Yahweh and success, the real laws of success. Isaiah 26:9 says, with my soul I have desired you in the night. Yes, with my spirit within me I seek you early. For when thy judgments are in the earth, the inhabitants of the world will learn righteousness. Isaiah 29:24 says, they also that erred in spirit shall come to understanding, that, and they that nurtured shall learn doctrine. Isaiah 45:22, look unto me and be saved, all the ends of the earth, for I am Elohim, and there is none else. I have sworn by myself, and the word has gone out of my mouth in righteousness, and they shall not return, that unto me every knee shall bow, and every tongue shall swear. Elohim teaches us to perform a job rather than just doing it for us. Isaiah 48:17, thus says Yahweh, your Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel, I am Yahweh, thy Elohim, which teaches you to profit, which leads you by the way that you should go. Oh, that you had hearkened to my commandments, and then had peace as a river, and your righteousness as the waves of the sea. Note that Elohim teaches us to act, to do the work, while he guides us to success. And if you'll study the record of how Elohim teaches throughout the Bible and the thread throughout these millennial scriptures, you will find very few sermons, very few lecture format like I'm doing right now. You'll find very few teachers standing in front of the class type of training techniques. Elohim walked and talked in the garden with Adam and Eve, and he walked and talked with Abraham. Moses spent time person to person on the mountain, and Yeshua walked with his disciples with a constant commentary on events as they unfolded. Paul was in the desert, and of course, the visions. Notice how Yahweh instructs us to teach our children. Deuteronomy 6:6, these words which I command you this day shall be in your heart. And you shall teach them diligent to your children, and you shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down and when you rise up. And you shall bind them for a sign upon your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes, and you shall write them upon the post of your house and upon your gate. The method is mentoring, frequent daily applications, study in action, coupled with abundant physical and action links. And when a key element needs to be added that is not clear, aha, the direct word of the Master. This is how Elohim will teach his children in the world tomorrow. Learning through application, mentoring, and direct vision. Isaiah 58:11 says, "And Yahweh shall guide you continually and satisfy your soul in drought and make fat your bones, and you shall be like a watered garden and like a spring of water whose waters fail not. And they that shall be of you shall build the old waste places, and you shall raise up the foundations of many generations, and you shall be called the repairer of the breach and the restorer of the paths to dwell in." Acts 3:20 says, "And he shall send Yeshua HaMashiach, which before was preached unto you, whom the heaven must receive until the times of the restitution of all things, which Elohim has spoken by the mouth of all his holy prophets ever since the world began." Now the earth is on a road to being restored into a perfect paradise, a worldwide Garden of Eden. Luke has now begun training in agriculture with a minor in engineering. He's met a young, beautiful woman from Wisconsin. And they're planning a life, a long, long life together. And he has already started building their future home on a ridge overlooking the Jordan Valley, facing east. When they arrived, it was a sandy desert and a dry wadi going east. But now there are springs along the ridges and creeks merging into rivers, emptying into the distant Jordan itself. A new east-west valley and valleys encourage rain into the previous dry landscape. Gardens and trees are now actively being planted and are spreading towards the distant Jordan. Isaiah 51:3, "For Yahweh shall comfort Zion, he will comfort all her waste places, and he will make her wet wilderness like Eden and her desert like the garden of Yahweh." Rebuilding a wasted landscape. Isaiah 29:17 continues, "Is it not yet a very little while, and Lebanon shall be turned into a fruitful field, and the fruitful field shall be esteemed as a forest." Isaiah 35:1 continues, "And the wilderness and the solitary place shall be glad for them, and the desert shall rejoice and blossom as a rose. And it shall blossom abundantly and rejoice even with joy and singing. The glory of Lebanon shall be given unto it, the excellency of Carmel and Sharon. They shall see the glory of Yahweh and the excellency of Elohim. Strengthen you the weak hands and confirm the feeble knees." Isaiah 35:7 continues, "And the parched ground shall become like a pool, and the thirsty land springs of water. And in the habitation of dragons, where each lay, shall be grass with reeds and rushes." Isaiah 41:15, "Behold, I will make you a new sharp threshing instrument, having teeth, and you shall thresh the mountains and beat them small, and shall make the hills as chaff." Now, why in the world a machine? Elohim could make the passes in the mountains by earthquakes and miracles and other kinds of actions that he works through. But he makes, or he directs, the making of a machine that people are to use to do the job. Isaiah 41:16, thou shalt fan them, and the wind shall carry them away, and the whirlwind shall scatter them, and you shall rejoice in Yahweh, and shall glory in the Holy One of Israel. When the poor and the needy seek water, and there is none, and their tongue fails for thirst, I, Yahweh, will hear them. I, the Elohim of Israel, will not forsake them. I will open rivers in high places and fountains in the midst of the valleys. And I will make the wilderness a pool of water and a dry land springs of water. This is what's called terraforming, changing of the land. Is it only the direct interventions of Elohim to terraform the planet? Luke himself has helped build the threshing machine that opened up the valley from Tekoa eastward across into the Wadi Ephraim, allowing rain-bearing clouds to move across the western range into the eastern slopes. Isaiah 41:19, and I will plant in the wilderness the cedar and the shittah tree and the myrtle and the oil tree, and I will set in the desert the fir tree and the pine and the box tree together. Now, will Elohim himself plant those trees or direct people to plant those trees? Isaiah 41:20 says, and that they may see and know and consider and understand together that the hand of Yahweh has done this and the Holy One of Israel has created it. Here is a description of the process of rebuilding the terrain done by the hand of Elohim and the work of his people. And preparing the land for cultivation, you can read through Leviticus 26:1-13 and Deuteronomy 28:1-14 and see the benefits of doing things by the law of Yahweh. Isaiah 5:8 says, woe to them that join house to house, that lay field to field, till there be no place, that there may be placed alone in the midst of the earth. A description of our time that won't be then. The rebuilding of a transportation network. Isaiah 11:16 says, and there shall be a highway for the remnant of his people, which shall be left from Assyria, like it was to Israel in the day that he came out of the land of Egypt. Isaiah 19:23 says, in that day there shall be a highway out of Egypt to Assyria, and the Assyrian shall come to Egypt, and the Egyptian to Assyria, and the Egyptian shall serve the Assyrians. And in that day shall Israel be the third part with Egypt and Assyria, even a blessing in the midst of the land, whom Yahweh of hosts shall bless, saying, blessed be Egypt, my people, and Assyria, the work of my hands, and Israel, mine inhabitants. Now, highways will produce rapid and safe transportation to all nations. Does this mean that we will continue with the internal combustion engine, the 18-wheelers, the jetliners of today? What kind of highways will these be? Consider, maybe, magneto rails. 400 miles an hour, quiet, safe, non-polluting, operated by solar and wind-generated electrical systems, and magnetic levitation systems, and there are, of course, many other options. Isaiah 43 says, the voice of him that cries in the wilderness, prepare you the way of Yahweh, make straight in the desert a highway for Elohim. Now, why does Elohim fool with all this? In a moment, in a billionth of that moment, Elohim can create a universe, a big bang, or the origin of the universe. And in 6 days, he can create a perfect world. And did he really need 6 days to do it? Why does Elohim bother with what man can do on a small planet, circling a small, minor, solitary sun, the third branch of the second spiral arm of the number two galaxy in a medium-sized cluster of galaxies, and the outer reaches of the Virgo cluster, itself only a speck in the cosmic galactic cluster networks? But consider, just as we love to see and participate in the first steps, in the first words, the early development of our own sons and daughters, so Elohim, the ideal father, enjoys and loves and revels in the simplistic, infantile efforts of his very own sons and daughters. It is a characteristic of Elohim, although he can accomplish all things with a flick of his index finger, yes, with a spoken word, or even just a focused thought, but he is intimately involved with, completely committed to, observing and managing and participating in the restoration of all things, restoring them through his sons and his daughters, through all men, now his servants. Did you engineers ever teach your children basic physics? Did you investors ever teach your children the basics of the stock market? Did your secretaries ever teach your children the basics of a computer system? Did your accountants ever teach your children how to balance a checkbook? Are your homemakers teach your children how to plan and cook a dinner? Are the janitors how to efficiently organize and clean the garage? Are you nutritionists? Did you teach your children the basics of nutrition? Are carpenters? Did you ever teach your children how to lay a straight line? Are your physicians? Did you ever teach your children the basics of anatomy and physiology? Then, as we are pleased to teach our children what little we know, to inspire them to achieve, to accomplish, so does our Heavenly Father. He similarly takes great pleasure in teaching his children. The conclusion is clearly and unequivocally that Elohim takes greater pleasure in his seeing his children solve the problems and teaching them to succeed than just doing the job by his own minor personal effort. The pleasure of teaching the most noble professions. Only our Messiah and his father are truly Rabbi. Now, the biological revolution. It should be clear by now that there will be plenty need for educated teams of carpenters and stonemasons and engineers and accountants and shipbuilders and highway planners and geologists and metallurgy scientists and agriculturalists and forestry specialists and merchants and homemakers and teachers. But now, as the physical world is reconstructed, what about the biological world, the world of plants and animals? And Joe Good touched on this briefly the other day, Isaiah 11:6, and the wolf shall dwell with the lamb, and the leopard shall lie down with the kid, and the calf and the young lion and the fatling together, and the little child shall lead them. And the cow and the bear shall feed, and their young ones shall lie down together, and the lion shall eat straw like an ox. The suckling child shall play on the hole of the asp, and the weaned child shall put his hand on the crocodile's den. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth shall be full of the knowledge of Yahweh as the waters cover the sea. Now, what does it take to change a lion to a vegetarianism? Appetite, obviously. That means his neurological system has got to be changed. The teeth, you know, he can't grind hay. He'll starve. His stomach, intestines, you know, he'd be clogged up. You know, he's going to need some extra pouches in the stomach there. Going to need a change in his intestinal system. His hormonal system has to be changed. The liver and the pancreatic enzymes have to be changed to a vegetarian type system. His taste and smell, of course, the feet and the claws and his temperament. Now, some scholars have treated this description as a metaphor of an idyllic world with a spiritual undercurrents only, but not to be taken literally. But I would contend that the description is not only literal, but that the extension of the context implies a real world, really, really free of harm, physical and spiritual, and that this is not only possible, it is sure to happen. This world tomorrow lion is an impossible transformation unless one fully comprehends the complexity and the thoroughness of the changes Isaiah describes. In the context of the prophet's writings, there is a description of the desperate spiritual situation of ancient Israel. True. And all who read this book, and it is linked with the deplorable physical conditions which result from the violations of Yahweh's laws over many generations. And the prophet clearly links a millennial revival of spiritual understanding and obedience to Yahweh's laws to physical changes in the land and changes in the world at large. The message of Isaiah is universal. The extent of the prophecy of the revival includes universal peace, universal prosperity, a change in the nature of man and of the real world, from mountains and deserts and rivers and climate to correspondingly complex biological changes here and elsewhere described. Now, that being said, how can the lion change? And how can the wolf change and the serpent change? Miracles of Yahweh could be in a quick flick of his little finger and just change all that. Possible, but what about? What if? If he were consistent, and he is, he will show us the way to bring these changes about. Or the work with humans to help bring them about. Now, in our day, we live in a time when knowledge is not only increasing, it is exploding. In the last 10 years, mankind has gained immense understanding and quickly is applying the applications of genetics. Can we change an animal's characteristics and the characteristic of his offspring? Sure, we can do that. We can even clone sheep and cows and now people. The science of genetics is, as we speak, making tremendous advances. The Human Genome Project, more monumental than the Man on the Moon Project, but not quite as well heralded, because there's more profit in it. Genetic production of insulin. In the old days, if any diabetics out there, your Christian was struggled with this pork insulin because that's all we had. Well, now it's human insulin made from bacteria where the gene has been inserted into bacteria, E. coli, which is in your gut, and just pours it out by the vats. So human insulin no longer, nobody would prescribe pork insulin anymore. Growth hormone now available, and it's being misused, as you might figure. Coming soon are genetic cures for Duchenne muscular dystrophy and cystic fibrosis and sickle cell anemia. Not quick fixes, but cures by replacing the gene. And then in a few years, for multiple sclerosis and spinal cord injury, for all the neuropathies and for stroke. Now, it is possible that we may not live to see all of these in this age. We may even die of one of them. But all of this in our days by human effort alone. But there are blocks and there are barriers, and of course there are immoral and selfish aberrations of these things, a mixture of good and evil, the world we live in today, of greed and of altruistic motivations. But what can you be sure of? We will see them cured in the world tomorrow. And it is possible that we or our children or our grandchildren will have a hand in that reconstruction. What if Elohim directly guided man in the discovery and the application of biological laws? What if the greed factor was removed, the selfishness eliminated? What if the barriers were removed? Aha. Proverbs 29:8. Where there is no vision, the people perish. Now, there's more to that than you think, because the word vision here, Hassan, is not being able to see, but it's a divine vision. Where there is no divine vision, direct revelation, the people perish. We've all experienced these things, whether we call them visions for God or not. I remember when I was in college and I was a chemistry major and I was struggling one night with a terribly complex physical chemistry problem, and I just couldn't solve it. This way, and it never worked out. That way, it never worked out. For hours, this went on, and finally, exhausted, I fell on the bed asleep. And what? I dreamed the answer to this solution. It was so simple. And I woke up. I woke myself up and wrote it down real fast there before I sleep again. And we have these experiences even now. But what about then when we have direct contact with Messiah and his saints who can give that little cue that will break through the barrier that our own knowledge doesn't allow? Yahweh gives visions, divinely revealed answers, not so that we can be wiser, but so that we can use that knowledge, combine it with what we know and can do. And then even more can be achieved. There will be plenty of Hassan vision in the world to come. Leviticus 26:6 says, I will give peace in the land, and you shall lay down, and none shall make you afraid. And I will rid evil beasts out of the land, neither shall the sword go throughout the land. Now, Elohim here promises a land, a world free of evil creatures. Now, when one considers that there really is really very little risk of being attacked by a lion or a wolf or a bear, so what is the real evil beast that the land needs to be gotten rid of? The real enemies in our day are microbes. We can't see them, but they're here among us. The conquering disease, malnutrition, we just described how that will happen. Worldwide good nutrition will go a long way in establishing abundant health. However, it will not solve malaria or schistosomiasis or sleeping sickness or yellow fever, regardless how healthy your diet is. But these could be eliminated by the changing the nature of the mosquito and the tsetse fly, changing their food from blood to fruit. Equine encephalitis, West Nile disease. Have you heard of that recently? Changing the nature of the mosquito by genetic engineering under the direction of the Creator himself, reestablishing the original nature of his creation. Now, mosquitoes eat fruit, and they eat plants mostly, but some, and only some, suck blood to feed their eggs. Not all do that, so if we could just introduce a gene from the mosquitoes that eat the fruit and don't need the blood into those that do suck the blood and need the blood, they wouldn't need the blood anymore, and then we could spread that in a systematic way around the world. This is not impossible, but it would need the guidance of a master to guide through the maze of limiting and complicating factors so that we do not unduly upset other benign systems. These changes can be done. They will be done by divine guidance through his created mankind. Mankind will finally fulfill the saying, and Yahweh blessed them, and Yahweh said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and restore the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the earth and over every living thing that moves upon the earth. Genesis 1:28. Yahweh has always intended for man to have dominion over the entire biosphere, to the point where once again we can say Hine Tov, it is very, very good. Through systematic changes in human activity, righteous living, systematic changes in the nature of the biosphere, the world will be rid of evil creatures. No more hepatitis, no more AIDS, no more typhoid or polio or influenza. They may require changes in the virus itself. And no more cancer and arthritis and congenital deformities and of the host of genetic diseases. Isaiah 29:18 says, "And in that day shall the deaf hear the words of the book, and the eyes of the blind shall see out of obscurity and out of darkness." Isaiah 35:5, "And the eyes of the blind shall be opened, and the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. Then shall the lame leap as a hart, and the tongue of the dumb sing. And in the wilderness shall waters break out as streams in the desert." And the neurological problems of spinal cord injury and traumatic brain injury and stroke, all kinds of neurological defects being cured. Isaiah 58:11, "And Yahweh shall guide you continually and satisfy your soul in drought and make fat your bones, and you shall be like a watered garden and like a spring of water whose waters fail not. And it shall be of you shall build the old waste places and shall raise up the foundations of many generations and be called a repairer of the breach and restorer of paths to dwell in." Isaiah 65:25, "And the wolf and the lamb shall feed together, and the lion and shall eat straw like the bullock, and the dust shall be the serpent's meat, and they shall not hurt nor destroy in my holy mountain, says Yahweh." Ezekiel 47:12, "And by the river upon the bank thereof, and on this side and on that side, shall grow all trees for meat, whose leaves shall not fade, neither shall the fruit thereof be consumed. It shall bring forth new fruit according to its months, because their waters they issued out of the sanctuary. And the fruit thereof shall be for meat, and the leaf thereof for medicine." Trees with food and medicine available. Food and medicine for health. Nutrition plus special purpose plants. But a question here might be, why is medicine available if there are no diseases or ailments? And why does not Elohim heal all ailments miraculously and by miraculous means, especially then when he is physically present on the earth? Now, this question does not imply that Elohim will not heal miraculously when he chooses to. It does clearly imply that Elohim gives the means and the methods, but he expects men to physically apply physical treatments. It is obvious that these changes in the world and society and the climate, the physical changes, the physical features, the cities and the farms, and the creatures and mankind himself will take a long time, possibly hundreds of years. The earth and the inhabitants ever improving during the 1,000 years. Now, lifespan in the millennium. Consider now, if all diseases are gradually eliminated, those that cause serious harm are miraculously healed, such as trauma, and the genetic defects of man is corrected, like it is in other creatures, how long will a man or woman live in the millennium? Acts 3:21 says, "Whom the heaven must receive until the times of the restitution of all things, which Elohim has spoken by the mouth of his holy prophets since the world began." Now note here that restitution equals restoration. That is not unclear. All things includes a lot. A world under Elohim, a world like a Garden of Eden, a world of perfect health without diseases I submit to you that a 1,000-year potential lifespan will occur. It is erroneous to think that Psalms 90:10 implies that man is limited to 70 years. The days of our years are 70 years, and if by reason of strength they be 80 years, yet it is their strength and labor and sorrow, for it is soon cry out off, and we fly away. Does this imply that Elohim ordained the lifespan of man to be 70 years? Can't be, because even today a baby born in Wisconsin can expect to live 85 years on average. And the group of people that is increasing the most of all society is those who live over 100. And it is rapidly rising, even in this polluted world. And most longevity scientists consider the human genetic lifespan, when the genes tend to cut off, to be somewhere between 120 and 150 years, even today. Genesis 2:17, "But of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat, for in the day that you eat thereof you shall surely die." And the day that you eat thereof you shall surely die. 2 Peter 3:8 says, "But, beloved, be not ignorant of this one thing, that one day with Yahweh is as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years as one day." Isaiah 51:3 says, "For Yahweh shall comfort Zion, and he will comfort her waste places, and he will make her wilderness like Eden, and her desert like the garden of Yahweh. Joy and gladness shall be found therein, thanksgiving and the voice of melody." And a characteristic of Eden was, "You shall not die." Isaiah 65:21, "They shall build houses and inhabit them, and they shall plant vineyards and eat the fruit thereof. And they shall not build and another inhabit. They shall not plant and another eat. For as the days of a tree are the days of my people, and mine elect shall long enjoy the works of their hand." Time, ample time, a factor in the high quality of life and in productivity and so many things. Imagine being off for 3 feasts per year. Not just for Sukkot, but full-time off for 3 pilgrimage feasts every year. And time to travel. And time off every 7 years, the principle of the sabbatical year. Not just for farmers, but to study, to serve, to help someone, to travel, to plan. Ever want a new career? Luke, our 19-year-old friend who lived into this new world, he developed and managed a fig tree farm for 100 years, exporting throughout Israel and Lebanon. Then he took 5 years to learn to be a magnetic engineer. He did that for 100 years. And is now considering maybe another profession. Living in a world of increasing gladness, a world of unparalleled technology, but always linked to the land, always a land-based economic support. And he took a year off to volunteer in building the new magneto rail line across Africa. Luke is still living on in joy and health and accomplishment at the ripe old age of 1,019. He and his peers have exceeded the age of Adam, of Enoch, Methuselah, and Seth. He has dozens of children, many grandchildren, and great children which he sees, who he has helped to teach the law of Yahweh, the ways of abundant life. Now, by what you can see, even though we only see partly, we can see that even physical life in the millennium will be exciting, fulfilling, full of adventures, discovery, profitable work, long lives, full of education, travel, personal development, public service. All of this, one part of the great plan of Elohim, made possible by the planning, the unselfish life, and the sacrifice of the Lamb, our Messiah. the psalmist well put it, Psalm 113:1, praise you, Yahweh, praise, O ye servants of Yahweh, praise the name of Yahweh, blessed be the name of Yahweh from this time forth forevermore. Baruch atah Yahweh, Baruch Hashem, Yahweh. Blessed art thou, Yahweh, blessed be the name of Yahweh.